Shabbat Shalom. I'd like to spend some time during this message on the flood, Noah's flood. And especially the part where he promises that he won't flood the whole earth again. But what I'm really waiting for is to see that rainbow again for that covenant promise. From when we look at it, we know it's not true. Not really. That's not going to be my message. Although I was thinking about it earlier, but didn't give me enough time to prepare. I want to talk about something today that had been on my heart a while back, a number of years ago. And I want to ask you the same question that went through my mind. Has there ever been a time in your life when you were really searching for things? I mean, maybe you were going through life repetitiously. You know, maybe you would get up early in the morning and take your shower, dress, and eat, and drink your coffee, go to work, spend all day at work, come home, do the chores, sleep, get up the next morning, and take a shower, and dress, eat, drink stronger coffee, and go through work. And the whole repetition thing, you know, you wonder, what is the meaning of this? I mean, is there an end to all this? So I wanted to take a look at a book that somebody wrote that specializes in this search, in this quest for the meaning of life. And that book is one of our favorites, maybe not, Ecclesiastes. So let's turn to that book. The Hebrew name is Kohelet. Kohelet is a Hebrew name that means the assembler. And the English had transliterated it to a Greek name, Ecclesiastes, which is derived from that title, Ecclesia, which is the assembly. So in Ecclesiastes, this book is 12 chapters, and I wanted to break it down for us, because obviously we're not going to get through the whole 12 chapters, but I want to break it down so we can see the important chapters to look at in this writer's particular quest for the meaning of life. It's broken down in the four sections by the first chapter being partly one of an unnamed narrator. And this narrator gives us a synopsis of what's going to happen and what's going to be spoken about from Kohelet. And the second section starts with verse 12 in chapter 1 and continues on through chapter 6. Which is the actual chapters we want to look at, because this is where Kohelet is seeking different avenues in finding that meaning of life. And then it goes on from chapter 6 through the end of the book, where he's given us some words of advice. And then it ends, just like book ends, the narrator starts and gives us a little introduction, and then he ends with this short conclusion of what he's found out, what Kohelet says. The name Kohelet, as I mentioned, is the assembler, but many contribute this particular book to Solomon. It's a traditional view that Solomon wrote this book, but I wanted us to look at a possibility, and there is another view, that there is somebody else that wrote this book. It's more of a modern thinking, but I wanted to just to throw it out at you and make your own conclusions as to who wrote the book. They view that it couldn't have been Solomon because, first of all, you know, he adopts this nickname, Kohelet. Why would he do such a thing? Is he hiding something? Or is, you know, if so, why would he be hiding it? Or does it have a particular impact on this book? So they couldn't really get grips on that. And that was one of the questions that they had. And there are some other verses that actually kind of opened my eyes to, you know, maybe this could be somebody else. Let's look at verse 12. We'll go back to starting the chapter. But in verse 12, we've got in Hebrew, it's Ani Kohelet Hayiti Melech Al Yisrael Bayu Shalom. That is, I, Kohelet, was king over Israel and Jerusalem. It's kind of interesting here, this Yiti was is being used here as is in past tense. That assumes that at one point Solomon was alive, but yet didn't reign in his kingship. And if we look at 1 Kings in chapter 11, it specifically says that Solomon died during his reign, during his kingship. So that kind of opened my eyes, and then, you know, maybe there's something to that. Let's look down at verse 16. I thought to myself, look, I have grown, increased in wisdom more than anyone who has ruled over Jerusalem before me. This is also a plural here, saying more than anyone. But when we look at it, who were these all these kings prior to Solomon? There's only one that's indicated, and that's his father, Ben-David. So these were just, you know, some eye-openers that I was looking at, and just, you know, made me think maybe there is a writer here that obviously is using Solomon persona throughout this book, because we can see intertwined in these scriptures that, you know, that this is resembling Solomon. I mean, after all, this writer is seeking the meaning of life, and he seeks this through different avenues like wealth and wisdom and pleasures, and who more than anybody had acquired these type of things. So anyway, whichever camp that you want to be in, the main objective of this book indeed is that we're seeking for the quest of the meaning of life. So let's start from the beginning. I want to spend some time on the narration, because the narrator, who is unnamed, is giving us a synopsis of the book and what he's viewing, what he observed, the things that Colette's going to bring about. And the first phrase that the narrator brings about that Colette will be mentioning numerous of times in this book is the phrase meaningless, meaningless. Everything is meaningless. And this is a Hebrew, and in Hebrew, there, whenever you see two identical words like this, it's an indication of intensity, that it's really important, and it's a sense of importance about what is being said. So when we have two words, meaningless, meaningless, and then going on to say everything is meaningless, it has some deep meaning. So the narrator is pointing out this, and it is true that in fact, over 35 times has this phrase been used within this book. And he goes on to mention about what does a man gain from all this? What does he profit? And we see that he's asking this right after, immediately after, he says everything is meaningless. So what? That question doesn't even have to be answered. What gain is this? Well, you know, there's no need for an answer. This is merely for an effect. What gain is there? Well, there is no gain if everything is meaningless. So he's using this merely for an effect to make an impact on, again, everything is meaningless. And what else does the narrator have? He goes on that he says that at which he toils under the sun. What profit is there in toiling? And this word here is interesting. Actually, this phrase is interesting because we have a noun here and a verb that come from the same Hebrew word, Hebrew root word, yamol, which means it's a deeper sense of toiling than like work or labor. This is like drudgery, misery. You know, hard work. Hard, you guys, you know, if you're going to work toiling, you don't want to quit your job, you know. I mean, if it's toiling, then maybe you should just look for another job to provide a means. But we don't want to be working in misery. But actually, I'd probably do that more at home than what I do at work. But it's productive. I won't tell you who my slave master is, but she's good. Next we have what the narrator pulls out, and this is really interesting, through pretty much the remainder of this first chapter. Generations come and generations go. In these phrases, he's going to be painting a picture. This generation in Hebrew, the Hebrew root word is dor, and there's actually a verb with a similar root word, dor, that means circular. And I think what the narrator is pointing out that Colette's trying to give us a picture of is this the war, which is circular. Generations come and generations go. It's a cycle. In fact, it'll kind of confirm itself when we finish off the rest of this chapter, because it has some other ideas that are on the earth that also continue to cycle out. And let's go right into that. One of them, one thing that he mentions here that he's frustrated with is that, yeah, the generations come and the generations go, but yet the earth remains. You know, it's as if he's saying, you know, we're the Lord of the earth, and the earth is here for us, yet it gets to stay, and we have to leave. We kind of dissolve into the dust. And this repetition is also continues on with some other areas that he brings about, and he brings it with the sun. Sun sets, sun rises, hurries back to where it rises. And then the same with the wind. The wind blows to the south and turns to the north. And it's a similar thing, a repetition, just like our Hebrew word door for generation. And then he ends his earthly picture with the waters. The waters constantly are flowing. The waters constantly flow into other areas, but yet they all return back to the origin. And this observation from Colette, some suggest, is in particular that it was a picture of actually the Dead Sea in Israel, because the Jordan River enters in the north into the Dead Sea, but yet the Dead Sea doesn't empty itself, but yet it's constant and never flows over. So we have the sun, the wind, the water, all giving us an idea of repetition, just like the generations. And he is frustrated with that because, you know, we don't get to stay. So far, our search for meaning of life is kind of dreary. Well, let's go on. Let's go on to chapter 2. Chapter 2. He gets down to, this is starting Colette's monologue now in chapter 2. So we left the narrator. Now we're into Colette's quest for finding the meaning of life and the things that he's going to utilize to find that. And to begin with, in chapter 2, it's just full of gratification that Colette attempts to find the meaning of life. He's using all kinds of pleasures. If we look to kind of glean through this chapter, he uses wine, and he uses wisdom. He uses, and down back in verse 4, great projects. And indeed, if he is kind of looking through the lens of Solomon, he built magnificent properties and palaces. And he also plants vineyards and gardens and parks, all kinds of fruit trees, and you know, reservoirs to water them, and he even had slaves, and he had more herds and flocks than anyone in Jerusalem. He had silver and gold there at verse 8, treasures of all kinds, and he acquired all kinds of singers, and he can't have my singer though, and concubines. Anything that was a delight of man. And I look at this, and how could he do this? You know, we wear these prayer shawls, and they have the zizios on the end of them. And if you remember back in Numbers chapter 15, why do we wear this? Why do we wear zizis? Remember God's commandments? Yep. He says to look, that's one. Then remember God's commandment. Third, to obey them. But then he says at the end of that, why we need to do those things. And that is so that our hearts and our eyes won't see all kinds of things that will lure us and then prostitute ourselves. And this is exactly what's happening here with Colette. His thinking and observation, acquiring all these things, is just self-gratification. That's all it is. He's gratifying his body. He's gratifying himself through all these things. And nevertheless, he does not find any contentment with that. So that, too, was all meaningless. And we're going to see as we kind of flow through these chapters that each chapter, it seems as if Kohelet is getting deeper into misery. He's getting deeper into frustration. And one of the things that he points out that not only is everything meaningless, but everything under the sun, that's a restricted scope. He's restricting himself just to under the sun. I want to come back to that and talk about that a bit here in a few moments. Let's jump to chapter 3. This is an interesting shift with Kohelet because now in a different style of writing, he's bouncing two types of life experiences against one another. And if you ever listen to music much, this particular verse has actually been used in a song back in the 60s that made the number one Billboard chart, and that was called Turn, Turn, Turn. You know? To everything, turn, 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 there is a season. Yeah, that one, you guys. We could almost, like, do this whole verse and just sing it, you know. This was actually my first memory verse, and I wasn't even a believer then. I loved the song. But I wanted to look at that and see if there was a connection to the Bible or, you know, why did this writer, actually the birds who made it popular and came to the number one, they didn't write it. It was actually by Pete Seeger back in the 50s. And as I was looking through this and why he wrote it, it was really a political effort. Pete Seeger, he was kind of politically motivated. And his whole thing was basically at the very end where, you know, this was time of peace. You know, it's kind of the 60s thing, peace and all that. So that was the main reason he wrote it. The very last verse where it says there was a time for war and a time for peace. And of course, his whole idea is we don't want war. We just want peace all the time. But nevertheless, one thing I did find out in the search for the writer of the song, he contributed 45% of his royalties to an organization in Israel by the name of it's Israel Committee Against Home Demolition. And that particular organization goes into the occupied territories and tries to preserve homes from being destroyed. And if they are destroyed, they go in and rebuild. And even though that song, way back in the 50s and 60s, to this day, that organization from the 45% royalties receives over $7,000 a year. I thought that was kind of interesting, that one song, if only, could bring that much money. But let's go on. His observation on this poem, he has a kind of a poetic fashion here. What is his conclusions? And we come down to verse 10, and Kohelet starts to give us his observation and conclusions on this. Verse 10, I've seen the burden God has laid on men. But then he kind of gives us a glimpse of hope. How about that? Verse 11, he has made everything beautiful in its time. So through this poem, he sees that God has set all this in fashion. But then, as Kohelet would have it, it seems like he was pleased for the truth. But then towards the end here, at the last part of the verse, he's complaining to God that, well, you kept your creation from knowing what's going on in creation. So once again, he has this despair of frustration. And the latter part of this particular chapter ends with even a deeper frustration, and that is he observes life and death. He sees the death of animals. He sees the death of humans. And this fact reveals to him that, gosh, humans have no advantage over animals. I mean, he's setting himself lower and lower into desperation and frustration. One more chapter, because I know I'm running out of time. We won't probably be able to go through all six chapters, but the chapter 4 is it's kind of a deep type of observation on Colette's part. And he's talking about oppression, all the oppression that was placed under the sun. And again, before we go into this verse and tear it apart, remember that under the sun, because I want to discuss that a little bit here in a minute. But he's talking about how he sees the tears of the oppressed and that they have no comforter. Power was on the side of their oppressors. And he goes into desperation, and he declares that the dead who've already died are happier than the living. He is at the pits of the bottom of his search. And this chapter, I mean, this just shows me that what is going on here? Why is he so discouraged, frustrated? And really, it's the key here as to what this phrase, under the sun, which I mentioned before, was going to be repeated 29 times throughout this book. And this is the phrase that under the sun that tells us, gives us an idea of what exactly is Colette lacking. Well, so far in all of Colette's observations of the meaning of life, his assessment has always been apart from God, apart from God's love. His perspective on the world has always been restricted. I mean, we look at this under the sun, and it's restricted to everything under the sun. He's leaving apart God. He's leaving apart the heavenly realm. So in a sense, you know, Colette's observations, and on one level, he's exactly right. He's exactly right, because everything in this world, everything in our life, is meaningless without God. There is nothing makes sense. Nothing can fulfill the void that we would have in our life. No pleasures, no wealth. I've been there, and it didn't work. And I think the picture here is that is the key. Everything under the sun is meaningless. I mean, he goes into describing death. That's all there is that we have to look forward to. So yeah, that would be true. And in our lives, what frustrates us? You know, is it wrong to be wealthy, or is it okay to be wealthy? Is it wrong to have pleasures? Is it okay to have some pleasures? Well, the answer is yes. It depends if we have God in our life. God, and if we put him as the priority, then things will balance out. But without that, people are in frustration. People are desperate. What about when we do have God in our lives, but yet we're going through this oppression, and maybe we're being afflicted in some sense? You know, maybe we're just being attacked, and we have a difficult time to seeing the heavenly realm, and we only look what's under the sun, what's going immediately around us. That's a difficult place to be in. In Philippians, let's turn there for a moment as I close out. Paul, Rob Scholl, went through the same thing. He had afflictions. In Philippians 1, chapter 1, verse 19, let's read that. For I know that through your prayers and the help giving by the Spirit of Yeshua, what has happened to me will turn out by my deliverance. I eagerly expect and hope that I'll have in no way be ashamed, but will have sufficient courage so that now as always Yeshua will be exalted in my body, whether by life or by death. For me, to live is Yeshua, and to die is gain. If I am to go on living in the body, this will mean fruitful labor for me. Yet, what shall I choose? I do not know. I am torn between the two. I desire to depart and be with Yeshua, which is better by far, but it's more necessary for you that I remain in the body. So, convinced by this, he knows that he will remain. And it's the same with us. We go through different phases of life. We go through different frustrations. But even through that, it is better for us to be alive and to see God in all this, and to continue to serving others to receive the blessings, no matter in what predicament we are in.